Welcome to season 5 of the Willing Equine podcast, the podcast all about creating positive relationships between horses and people. I'm your host, Adele Shaw, a certified equine behavior consultant, horsemanship mentor, and all-around horse lover. Hello, and welcome back to another TWE podcast episode. I'm really excited to start our next topic. We're going to be talking about things that have held you guys back from trying positive reinforcement training, focused training, whether in the past or currently. We're going to be kind of running through some of the feedback that I received from my followers on social media of the different things that they've either heard or experienced or are currently experiencing that have held them back from trying positive reinforcement focused training. So one of the first things that I received was that they didn't know it was possible or what was and wasn't possible and didn't see examples of it being used as a viable training method. I think this is a really common one and one that I definitely experienced early on in my understanding of clicker training, positive reinforcement, and debating whether or not to start exploring it. There was like 2 books out and 0 courses. There was maybe 3 accounts on social media that were showing, demonstrating any kind of positive reinforcement, clicker training, anything. And so the examples of what was possible and the just kind of demonstration of its viability was very, very minimal, if non-existent. There were a couple of YouTube channels, YouTube videos out. I have a very distinct memory of one particular channel that was a very influential in convincing me that this could be done, that positive reinforcement was viable for horses. And I remember spending a lot of time watching how they trained zoo animals and marine animals, so exotics, things like that, with positive reinforcement. And then I also had experience working with dogs. And so once I sat down and actually thought about it, I was like, okay, this seems very logical that we could do this with horses. It is they are not so abnormal to the animal kingdom that this wouldn't also work with them. It's just that it's not standard. It's not a standard protocol. It's not a standard approach. But I think the most influential thing in convincing me was seeing the work that a few of the more prominent original clicker trainers for horses were doing, and that they were successfully riding and they were successfully teaching things like jumping and groundwork and under saddle work. And I was like, okay, if they can do it, I can do it. So definitely since then, there has been a just huge increase in the amount of videos that are out there. There's a lot of YouTube channels that are out there now. There's a lot of people that are exploring it or are more experienced at their own boarding facilities that sometimes post on, or just their own homes or whatever, that post on social media. There's a lot of social media accounts. There's tons and tons of Instagram accounts. There's a handful on TikTok. There's quite a few on Facebook, and there's many YouTube channels as well. There's also more books available now, which is really cool. And we're even seeing some people showing up in the competition type arenas. Although I will say that it's pretty common for people who start to focus on positive reinforcement, clicker training type training, I'm just going to say positive reinforcement from here on out, do not really focus on competitive training and riding because the primary goals shift. A lot shifts for the horse-human team when they start to introduce positive reinforcement. It starts to become more about doing something together. It starts to become more about the relationship. It starts to become more about spending time together and doing things together and doing things that both the horse and the human enjoy together. And I know I've talked about this before on previous episodes, and so I won't spend too much time on it, but the show environment and how it's set up is really not conducive to supporting the horse as just their species and what's normal for them, what's appropriate for their species, what they find enjoyable. It's just not set up for them. It's set up for us. And so once you start to shift where your goals are and what you want to do with your horse and what you find enjoyable with your horse, a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times, the show thing, the kind of the whole shtick of going to shows and being competitive changes for a lot of people. So this is why we don't see it showing up very much in the show world, as well as just that the show world is not the competitive arena, regardless of the discipline, is very biased towards negative reinforcement type training. And so pressure and release, and is not very supportive or inclusive of positive reinforcement type training. So that's another contributing factor as well. So yes, this is definitely something that many people will bring up. You know, it just doesn't seem to be a viable option. I've never seen it done all the way. I've never seen it done well, but it is growing, and it is, and rapidly. Actually, I've seen it just double, triple, quadruple in size as far as how many people are exploring positive reinforcement, how many people are trying it, whether partial, part of the way or going full in. It's growing and it's continuing to grow. There's a lot more clinics. There's a lot more courses. There's so much more content freely available out there. It's really cool how the community is growing, and the understanding of what positive reinforcement is growing. And so it is very viable. It is a thing. It can be done. We see it done with every other species out there. And horses are not completely abnormal to elephants, giraffes, alligators, snakes, lizards, fish, ferrets, rabbits, dogs, lions, tigers, bears, oh my. I mean, they're all being trained with positive reinforcement. And even some, to some degree, if you're looking at certain types of things, like I remember going to a sanctuary that had, it was a big cat sanctuary, and for enrichment for the big cats, they did teach them to do different behaviors, and they did it with positive reinforcement, and they did do little mini shows for people who were contributing to the sanctuary. It wasn't like a, it's not like a circus or anything like that. Like the big cats were there as part of the sanctuary, and their training was part of their enrichment, and it was a really cool thing. And so they did these little mini shows where the people who came to visit could watch and observe a training session, is basically what it boiled down to. And it was so cool because they would do like whole, you know, obstacle courses and patterns and stuff like that. And it was all with positive reinforcement. And so, you know, if we can train cats to do this, and we can train dogs to do this, big cats, lions, tigers, you know, all of that, it's possible with horses. And absolutely, even though they are a prey animal, as some people will say, or just a flight animal, all of that, still possible. Still possible. So I won't spend too much longer on that one, but I can understand how this one was definitely, or is still, something that is holding people back. I just encourage you guys to start looking for who's training, and start watching the different videos that are out there freely available, and even go ask if you can go take some lessons, you know, do like some people come in to my place, and they'll travel from across the country, even out of the country, out of, you know, from a different country. They'll come and travel and spend a couple of days with me and do hands-on training with my horses and see what's possible, experience it, all of that. We call that an immersive program. And that is a really cool opportunity for many people to be able to experience. Another comment that I got was that they had a really strong doubt that if they give food, so if they use food rewards during a training session, what happens when the food runs out? Will the horse become frustrated when it's expected but it's not there? Will they become dangerous? For example, if they're on a trail ride and they run out of food, does that become dangerous? Does it mean I will always need to carry food with me if the food is over and the training session is over, and you can't, can you not ask for anything from the horse anymore after the training session is over? This is a really great question. And what I like to bring back into the conversation here is that the answer is the same as it is when we're training with pressure and release or negative reinforcement. We're just going to refer to it as negative reinforcement going forward. They are the same thing. Pressure and release is negative reinforcement by technical definition. So when we train with negative reinforcement, it is the same as when we're training with positive reinforcement. You must provide reinforcement, or else the behavior falls apart. It will not be sustained. No matter how much training you have done, if there is never any reinforcement for the behavior again, so if you only are applying pressure from here on out and you never take off that pressure, so you never release the aversive, the behavior will deteriorate and it will fall apart. And eventually you will get a horse that's completely numb to the cues. This is where like really dull lesson ponies, you know, like they're non-responsive and kind of just whatever, you can just kick and kick and kick on them and they never move or anything. That's what's happened. The timing of the pressure of the aversive is poor because they're working with, you know, novices, and then also there's no release and it's poorly timed release. This is the same thing that will happen if we remove or eliminate the reinforcement with positive reinforcement incompletely too, or if we have poor timing, etc. So, and if we just give the cue and cue and cue and cue and cue and never follow up with reinforcement. So the answer is going to be the exact same that I would give somebody who's training with negative reinforcement. And just to put it really simply, yes, you would need to have reinforcement with you at all times. You will need to carry enough food. Or also, if your horse likes scratches, you could use something like that. Scratches are pretty hard to run out of, although a lot of horses become satiated as far as how much scratches they want pretty quickly. So there's been times where I have run out of food and I will just resort to scratches for a little while until I can get us to the end of the training session or back to safety or whatever it is. There's been times I've been out on a trail and run out of food. I just hop off and go grab some grass and I'm ready to go again. And I just make sure and plan. I plan ahead of time. I strategize my training sessions. I carry backup food. I have more food available for me. And then by the time you're out on like a long trail ride like that, you should be going longer periods between reinforcement. You should have long duration in your behaviors that you're not having to carry. Like, I'm not saying you need to carry a 50-pound bag of hay pellets. I still carry a fairly, you know, normal sized pouch at my side, but we go on a 30-minute trail ride. That's because the act of walking and carrying the rider on the trail ride has a very long duration in between when the click and the reinforcer happens, and then I give that food and then we go again. So I'm not feeding as often as, like, let's say in the very beginning when I'm first starting a horse under saddle and they're first learning to take their little steps under saddle. I'm clicking and feeding quite often, so I'm going through food much faster. So that is something to keep into consideration too, is it's not that you have to carry around massive amounts of food all the time. You just need to plan accordingly for the behaviors you're going to be asking for and what your horse needs as far as their reinforcement level at that point for those behaviors and so on and so forth. It's no different than when we're training with negative reinforcement and planning accordingly for that. And to answer your other question, yes, if you run out of reinforcement and you're not using scratches and you're not using any food and you're just never offering reinforcement again, you will cause frustration to your horse. No different than if you stopped taking off the pressure. If you held on to the pressure and you never released pressure, you would cause frustration in your horse as well with negative reinforcement. So again, same, same. It's no different. It just looks different because we're actually carrying the reinforcer with us rather than using it through tactile aversives. And so meaning pressure. So squeezing, you know, their sides gently with our legs until they take that step forward, or, you know, putting the crop on if they're not moving fast enough, like just different things, like even mild aversives, like even things that you barely even think of, like you pick up on the reins gently or something like that. You train for these things and you've gotten it down to a very, very subtle cue and all that, but they're still constantly, the application of the aversive, so pressure, and then the release. And the release is always happening. There is always and should always be release when the horse does the behavior that you're asking for. And the same thing with positive reinforcement. There should always be reinforcers that follow the desired behavior being performed. If the training session is over and the food is done and you've given your end of session signal, so you're like all done and you've given your jackpot, that's how I end my sessions. I say all done and I give him extra food on the ground and I take my pouch off. Yes, the training session is over. And no, we don't ask for anything else from our horses at that time. Unless maybe a horse likes scratches or something or whatever, and you just want to ask them to do something and you give them a nice scratch afterwards, that's fine too. Also, additionally, I want to say that intermittent reinforcement or variable reinforcement for behaviors does happen. And this happens also with traditional negative reinforcement training too. But what we can do for a lot of behaviors is put them on a variable reinforcement schedule, meaning that they don't get reinforced every single time. It's only periodically. So one time when you ask for the backup, it doesn't get the reinforcement. But the second time you ask for the backup, it does get the reinforcement, assuming both times the horse backed up. Then we could work up to, you know, sometimes it happens after the first time you ask for the backup, and sometimes it's after the fourth time you ask for the backup. And so we can play with the reinforcement schedules so that your horse starts to be okay and accepting of sometimes the behavior does not immediately that you know, time of practicing it, that time of offering the behavior get reinforced, it might be the second or the third or the first or the 10th time that you ask for it. But you have to prepare for that and train your horse accordingly. And we don't do that for every behavior, but we do that for quite a few that need very practical application, like backing up is a really great example of this. There's very likely, if you're at a boarding facility, somebody's going to ask your horse to back up away from them and they won't be carrying food. No problem. You just put it on an intermittent schedule so that, or a variable reinforcement schedule so that only every once in a while, or, you know, every couple of times it gets reinforced and it changes. So not every day. It's, you know, if you're only doing it every third time exactly, then the horse is going to start to, that's actually not variable. So it would be sometimes it's the first time it's asked, sometimes it's the third time it's asked. It depends. That's basically what it boils down to. It depends on when it gets reinforced, but it does get reinforced at some point. It's just not every single time. So for a lot of behaviors where they need to be able to be offered, even when we're not in a training session, that's what we would do to help support the horse so they understand that they still need to do those behaviors when they are requested, even not in a structured training session. Okay, the next three I'm going to kind of put together. We had somebody comment about building behaviors from scratch when they're already dealing with a well-educated, traditionally trained horse, building that duration, that that's kind of been holding them back from trying positive reinforcement because they already have a well-trained horse. Why would I start, you know, from scratch and do that? As well as we had another person, a couple other people mentioned that they didn't have time to retrain. And then, yeah, just the amount of time that it's going to take to retrain all these behaviors. And especially if the horse is already doing them well, why would they? This is a really great reason to put off not trying positive reinforcement. I can see this being a very practical reason why to just keep doing with what you're doing. If it's working, why fix something that's not broken, right? And then also, especially if you feel very short on time and you have a lot of riding goals or training goals or whatever it is, and you feel like you don't want to start from scratch and start it completely over again, that seems very frustrating and unnecessarily time consuming. For these clients, when I talk to them and when I'm working with them, a lot of times what we do is we maintain the behaviors that the horse is doing well with and the human handler is doing well with. There doesn't appear to be any overt signs of stress. The horse is responding well to cues. Everything seems to be doing okay. The horse is not communicating that something is wrong. You know, maybe there's some stuff to perfect here or there. We could perfect some timing. We could work on our shaping plans, whatever it is. But overall, the horse appears to be doing quite well with that behavior and that type of handling in those contexts. And then what we'll do is on the side, we'll introduce some positive reinforcement just for the benefit of the relationship, for enrichment, for engaging the horse and making it more exciting, bringing in some of that classical conditioning, creating those positive associations, interacting with people, and do some fun activities together. So we'll do like teaching the horse how to fetch or just teaching some cones or following a target, like some fun, exciting behaviors on the side that maybe they're not going to disrupt anything else that you're doing, but they can also add a lot of pros to your relationship and to your training sessions together and to your engagement together, to your relationship together, and just mix up your day. They can mix up your day. They can help improve you and your horse's communication and your relationship. And there's a lot to learn from positive reinforcement that can be applied to traditional negative reinforcement type training. So there's a lot of benefits there, and it can help really strengthen the relationship. So that would be a perfectly acceptable, you know, thing to do, especially if you're not having any difficulties with your horse and everything seems to be going well, a way to start exploring positive reinforcement and learning about it on the side while continuing to do the same things you've always been doing normally on a day-to-day basis. And then you can reap a lot of the benefits of positive reinforcement without having to start from scratch, without having to totally throw all of your hard work in the trash, without feeling a lot of pressure to retrain things and a lot of pressure because of the short amount of time. Like if you only got one little 5-minute clicker training session in a week or a month, great, fine, that's awesome. Have fun with it. Enjoy it. Get the benefits from it. Learn things from it. And then if you want to later, start to integrate it into more areas of your interactions with your horses and your training with your horses. And maybe you realize, you know what, this cross-tying behavior is not as great as I would want it to be. And, you know, everything else has been fine, but that part I'm not so sure about. What if I, you know, started doing that with clicker training? Great, do it. and started to explore the benefits of positive reinforcement for that behavior. And then slowly transition things over as you feel you're ready for it. And this is actually exactly the recommendations I give to most all of my students coming through my courses or when I'm working with them in person. Same thing. I tell them this is the approach that I encourage them to take. The only time that we deviate from this and do something different is if we have a significant problem. If the horse is really not doing well, we can't handle them, they're unsafe, the human learner is scared or not feeling safe or has no experience with traditional training, and so there is no history to undo, it's just not there. You know, in these cases, then we're going to start with positive reinforcement. We're going to go all the way with it, and we're going to kind of start over if we need to or start from scratch. But those are different types of situations where I do recommend like starting cold turkey with positive reinforcement and switching everything over. I think, too, the fear of never riding again really is answered by my previous response as well, because we can, you know, continue with our traditional training and our riding and all of that while introducing positive reinforcement on the side and learning about it and getting more skills in that area and just like becoming more proficient, I should say, in positive reinforcement type training, clicker training. And then as we want, integrating it more and more and more into our day-to-day handling. And even if we want, switching over our riding to, you know, being positive reinforcement focused. But you don't have to give up your riding to start with positive reinforcement. It's not a one or the other. You don't have to completely cold turkey switch just because you want to explore it. There's a lot of gray area in the middle. Like there's a lot of flexibility, I should say, as far as what we train with positive reinforcement versus what we don't. I will say the big recommendation I have here to go along with that previous comment about, you know, some things with positive reinforcement, some with not, is we need to have clear start and end to our positive reinforcement training sessions. When food is available, they should be offering behavior, all of that, versus our negative reinforcement ones. The thing I don't recommend doing is mixing. So continuing to do your normal riding and then every once in a while clicking and giving some food. That approach I don't personally teach for a lot of reasons. And I talk about this more in my academy and in other podcast episodes. But if you're going to be out there and you just want to go dabble with it and play around, go ahead and follow some sort of format, follow a coach, an instructor, and in whatever form that is, get some support in that capacity and give it, you know, have it be concentrated. So it's we started our positive reinforcement focus session and now we've ended it. And now we're going to give our horse a short break. And then we're going to go back to our normal handling and taking off the food pouch, no clicker, no food available, etc. So that's usually how I recommend that people go about giving positive reinforcement a try and keeping the two things separate so that we don't frustrate the horse or create some, you know, messiness and chaos that we're going to have to resolve later. All right, that really wraps up this episode. We're going to be doing a part two, at least, if not a part three, when talking about things that have held you guys back from trying positive reinforcement. I do want to make a quick announcement, though. My academy is going to be reopening its doors very, very soon, if not already opened by the time you're listening to this episode. Head to my website, thewillingequine.com/academy, to learn all about it. And I have some really cool news that I have restructured a lot of it. I've made it brand new while also integrating everything that people have known and loved. I've taken all of that, the greatness and the awesomeness of the academy, and updated it to make it more accessible and support more people. And with also my updated training practices that, you know, as I've been learning and growing and developing as a coach and as a horse trainer, I've been integrating those practices now into my courses. I'm so excited to announce this and share it with the world. And I hope you guys will join me and join in on the academy and join the community and get all that support and guidance and just be welcomed into such an amazing space. The Academy is a wonderful space where everybody that's there is so welcoming and understanding and supportive. We're all, you know, here for the horse. We're all here to learn together, to support each other, to enjoy the journey together, and to make progress in our day-to-day handling and our learning and our relationship with our horses. So I hope you'll join me and check it out. Head to the website and go to the Academy page, and we'd love to have you join in on the Academy and see what it's all about. Thanks so much. much for listening. If you have any questions, please do email me at info@thewillingequine.com. If you'd like more information on my courses, coaching, consulting, or even access to free resources, please do check out my website, thewillingequine.com. If you like this podcast or this episode, please do leave feedback on the platform that you listen to it on.